I thought you would be safe. I want to say to my family, the augurs told me. But the augurs, I realize, promised me nothing. I force myself to meet my father's eyes. I have never seen him so defeated. Beside him, mother's white blonde hair shines as if lit from within, her fur-lined gown draped gracefully even as she kneels for death. Her pale face is fierce. "Strength, my girl," she whispers to me. Beside her, Livy breathes in short, panicked gusts. She whispers rapidly to a violently trembling Hannah. I try to grasp the sim at my waist to steady myself, but I can hardly feel it beneath my palm. "Your Majesty," I say, "please, the Commandant is planning a coup. You heard Lieutenant Farris. You must listen to me." Marcus lifts his eyes to me, their flat yellow chilling my blood. Slowly he draws a dagger from his belt. It is thin and razor sharp, with a Blackcliff diamond as its hilt. His prize for winning the first trial so long ago. "I can make it quick, Shrike," he says quietly, "or I can make it very, very slow. Speak out of 10 again, and see which one I choose." "Lieutenant Sergius," he calls out. The blackguard I cowed through blackmail and coercion just weeks ago slinks forward. "Secure the Shrike and her allies," Marcus says. "We wouldn't want their emotions to get the better of them." Sergius hesitates for just a second before signaling the other blackguards. Hannah sobs quietly, turning imploring eyes to Marcus. "Please," she whispers, "Your Majesty, we are engaged. I am your betrothed." But Marcus doesn't spare her any more attention than he would a beggar. Marcus turns to the paters in the throne room, and power exudes from him. He is no embattled emperor now, but one who has survived a scholar rebellion, assassination attempts, and the betrayal of the strongest families in the land. He twirls his dagger in his hand, and the silver catches the light of the sun now rising overhead. Dawn illuminates the room with gentle beauty that sickens me when I think of what is about to happen. Marcus paces back and forth behind my family, a brutal predator deciding whom to kill first. My mother whispers something to my father and sisters. "I love you."
"Men and women of the Empire,"
Marcus slows behind mother. Her eyes burn into mine, and she straightens her spine and throws back her shoulders. Marcus stills the movement of the dagger.
"Observe what happens when you fail your emperor."
The throne room falls silent. I hear the silver blade dip into my mother's throat, the gurgling tear it makes as he draws it across her neck and into her artery. She sways. Her gaze slides to the floor, her body soon following.
"No!"
Hannah shrieks, giving voice to the despair that has gripped my body. My mouth is salty with blood. I've bitten through my lip. While the courtiers watch, Hannah keens like a wounded animal, rocking over my mother's body, not caring about anything but her wretched, all-consuming grief. Livia's face is empty, her eyes confused as she peers down at the blood pooling, soaking the knees of her pale blue dress. I cannot feel the pain in my lip. My feet, my legs, seem so far away. That is not my mother's blood. That is not her body. Those are not her hands, lifeless and white. No. Hannah's scream yanks me from my daze. Marcus has grabbed her by her ruined hair.
"No, please,"
Her frantic eyes seek me out.
Help! Help me!
I strain against Sergius, a strange wounded snarl coming from my throat. I can barely hear her as she chokes out the words. My baby sister. She had the softest hair when we were girls.
Henny, I'm sorry!
Marcus draws the knife across her throat swiftly. His face is blank as he does so, as if the task requires all of his concentration. He releases her, and she thuds down beside my mother. The pale strands of their hair mingle. Behind me, the door to the throne room opens. Marcus sneers at the interruption.
Your Majesty!
I cannot see the soldier who enters, but the crack in his voice suggests that he wasn't expecting to walk into a bloodbath.
A message from Koff!
I'm in the middle of something.
Karis!
Marcus barks at the Commandant without looking at her.
Deal with it!
The Commandant bows and turns to leave, slowing as she passes me. She leans forward, putting a cold hand on my shoulder. I am too numb to flinch away from her. Her grey eyes are remorseless.
It is glorious to witness your unmaking, Bloodshrike, she whispers, to watch as you break.
My whole body shakes as she throws Cain's words back at my face. First you will be unmade. First you will be broken. Bleeding skies, I thought he meant when I killed Elias. But he knew. All that time while I agonized over my friend, he and his brethren knew what it was that would truly break me. But how could the Commandant possibly know what Cain said to me? She releases me and saunters out of the room, and I have no more time to wonder, for Marcus is before me.
Take a moment to say goodbye to your father, Shrike. Sergius, release her.
I take 3 steps to my father and fall to my knees. I cannot look away from my mother and sister.
Bloodshrike,
my father whispers,
look at me.
I want to beg him to call me by my name. I'm not the Shrike. I'm Helene. You're Helene. Your little girl.
Look at me, daughter.
I lift my eyes, expecting to see defeat in his gaze. Instead, he is my calm, collected father, though his whisper is ragged with grief.
And listen. You cannot save me. You could not save your mother, or your sister, or Elias. But you can still save the Empire. For it is in far graver danger than Marcus realizes. Tiberian will soon be surrounded by hordes of wild men, and I hear tell of a fleet out of Carcass, heading north to Navium. The Commandant is blind to it. She is too fixated on the destruction of the scholars and on securing her own power.
Father, I glance at Marcus, who is watching from a few yards away.
Damn! The Empire! Listen to me!
The sudden desperation in his voice terrifies me. My father fears nothing.
Gens Aquila must remain powerful. Our alliances must remain powerful. You must remain powerful. When war comes to this land from without, which it inevitably will, we cannot falter. How many marshals in this Empire?
Millions.
More than 6 million, my father says. 6 million men, women, and children, whose futures rest in your hands. 6 million who will depend on your strength, so that they may remain untouched by the torment of war. You are all that holds back the darkness. Take my necklace.
With shaking hands, I pull off the chain I used to bat at as a child. One of my first memories is father leaning over me, the Aquila ring dangling from his collar.
the embossed falcon in full flight catching the lamplight.
"You are mater of Jensaquir now," Father whispers. "You are Bloodshrike of the Empire. And you are my daughter. Do not fail me."
The moment my father eases back, Marcus strikes. It takes my father longer to die. He has more blood, perhaps. When his eyes darken, I think I cannot hurt any more. Marcus has wrung me dry of all my pain. Then my eyes fall upon my littlest sister. "You fool, Helene. When you love, there is always more pain." "Men and women of the Empire," Marcus's voice echoes from the rafters of the throne room. What in the bleeding hells is he doing? "I am but a plebeian, given the burden of rulership by our esteemed holy men, the augurs." He sounds almost humble, and I gape at him as he looks around at the assembly of the Empire's finest. "But even a plebeian knows that sometimes an emperor must show mercy. The bond between Shrike and emperor is one ordained by the augurs." He goes to Livia and lifts her to her feet. She looks between Marcus and me, mouth parted, skin blanched to grey. "It is a bond that must weather the darkest of tempests," the emperor says. "My Shrike's first failure is one such tempest. But I am not unmerciful, nor do I wish to begin my reign with broken promises. I signed a marriage agreement with Jensaquir." He glances at me, stone-faced. "And so I shall honor it, by marrying Mater Aquila's youngest sister, Livia Aquila, immediately. By joining my line to one of the oldest gens in the land, I seek to establish my dynasty and bring glory to the Empire once more. We shall put this," he looks distastefully at the bodies on the ground, "behind us. If, of course, Mater Aquila accepts." "Livia." I can only mouth my sister's name. I clear my throat. "Livia would be spared?" At Marcus's nod I stand. I force myself to look at my sister, because if she would rather die, then I cannot deny her that, even if it unravels my last bit of sanity. But the reality of what is happening finally hits her. I see my own torment mirrored in her eyes. But I see something else, too. My parents' strength. She nods. I accept," I whisper.
"Good," Marcus says. "We will marry at sunset. The rest of you, get out!"
He barks at the courtiers, who watch in horrified fascination.
"Sergius," the blackguard steps forward, "take my bride to the east wing of the palace. Make sure she is comfortable and safe."
Sergius escorts Livia away. The courtiers file out silently. As I stare at the ground in front of me, at the spreading pool of blood, Marcus approaches. He stands behind me and runs one finger along the back of my neck. I shudder in disgust. But a second later, Marcus jerks his body away.
"Shut up!"
he hisses. And when I glance up, I find he's not addressing me. Instead, he's looking over his shoulder at empty air.
"Stop!"
I watch with a dull sort of fascination as he growls and shakes his shoulders, like he's shaking off someone's grasp. A moment later, he turns back to me, but keeps his hands to himself.
"You stupid girl."
His voice is a soft hiss.
"I told you. Never presume that you know more than me.
I was well aware of Karis's little plot. I warned you not to defy me publicly, and still you barged in, screaming of a coup, making me look weak. If you'd kept your damned mouth shut, this wouldn't have happened.
Bleeding Skies. You knew.
I always know.
He digs his hand into my hair, yanking my head up and away from the sight of the blood.
I will always win. And now I possess the last living member of your family. If you ever disobey an order again, if you fail me, speak against me, or double-cross me, I swear to the skies that I will make her suffer more than you can possibly imagine.
He releases me violently. His boots are silent as he leaves the throne room. I am alone. But for ghosts.
Chapter 54. Liar. I stumble away from the flames, my invisibility gone. No, skies, no! Darin, Elias, little Tass, they cannot be dead in the inferno. Not after everything. I find that I am sobbing, that my invisibility has fallen, and I don't care.
You there, scholar!
Bootsteps thunder toward me, and I slide back across the polished stone of the rotunda, trying to avoid the grasping hand of a legionnaire who clearly thinks I'm an escaped prisoner. His eyes narrow, and he lunges forward, his fingers fastening onto my cloak, ripping it off. He casts it to the ground as I scramble away, then he hurtles his big body into mine.
Oof!
The breath leaves my lungs as I hit the bottom steps of the staircase. The soldier tries to flip me on my stomach to capture my hands.
Get off! Did you escape the pens? Ugh!
He jerks when I knee him in the groin. I unsheathe my dagger, drive it into his thigh, and twist. He bellows, and a second later, his weight is yanked off me, and he goes flying into the staircase, my blade still embedded in his leg. A shadow fills a space where he stood, familiar and utterly changed at the same time.
Elias?
I'm here. He hauls me to my feet. He is lean as a rail, and his eyes appear to almost glow in the thickening smoke.
Your brother is here. Tass is here. We're alive. We're all right. And that was beautifully done.
He nods to the soldier, who has ripped the dagger out of his thigh and is now crawling away.
He'll be limping for months.
I leap up and pull him into a hug, something between a sob and a cry erupting from my chest. We are both injured and exhausted and heart-sore. But when I feel his arms around me, when I realize that he is real, and here, and alive, I believe for the first time that we have a chance at surviving.
Where's Darin?
I pull away from Elias, looking around, expecting my brother to appear out of the smoke. Soldiers rush past us, desperate to escape the fire engulfing the martial section of the prison.
Here, take your Sims.
I shrug out of the crossbody scabbard, and Elias pulls them on. Darin does not appear.
Elias,
I say, worried now.
Where?
As I speak, Elias kneels, pulling something from the floor onto his shoulder. I think, at first, that it is a filthy bag of sticks. Then, I see the hands. Darin's hands. His skin is scarred, and he's missing a pinky and a middle finger. Still, I'd know those hands anywhere.
Skies.
I try to see Darin's face, but it's obscured by hanks of long, filthy hair. My brother was never particularly heavy, but he seems so small suddenly, a depleted nightmare version of himself.
He might not be what he was, Afia had warned. He's alive,
Elias reminds me when he sees my face.
He got a knock on the head is all. He's going to be all right.
A small figure appears behind Elias, my bloody dagger in hand. He gives it to me, then takes my fingers.
You must not be seen, liar, he says. Hide yourself!
Tass pulls me down the hall, and I let my invisibility fall over me. Elias starts at my sudden disappearance. I squeeze his hand so he knows I am close. Ahead of us, the prison doors are flung open. A knot of soldiers teems outside.
You have to open the scholar pens, Elias says. I can't do it while carrying Darren. The guards would be on me in a second.
Skies, I was to set more fires in the prison yard to add to the mayhem.
We'll have to do without the extra distraction, Elias says. I'll pretend I'm delivering Darren to the pens. I'll be right behind you. Tass, stay with Lyra. Watch her back. I'll find you.
One thing, Elias. I don't want to worry him, but he should know. The warden might know I'm here. I lost my invisibility upstairs for a moment. I got it back, but he could have seen the change.
Then stay away from him, Elias says. He's wily, and from the way he interrogated Darren and me, I'm certain he'd love to get his hands on you.
Seconds later, we burst out of the prison and into the yard. The cold is like a knife in the face after the stifling heat of the prison. The yard, though crowded, is devoid of chaos. Prisoners emerging from Koff are immediately escorted away. Koff's guards, many of them coughing, ash-faced or burned, are ushered into a line, where another soldier assesses them for injuries before assigning them to a task. One of the legionnaires in charge spots Elias and calls out to him.
You, he says. You there!
Let me dump this body, Elias grumbles, the perfect impression of a sullen orc. He pulls his cloak closer and edges away as another group of soldiers tumbles out of Koff's inferno. Go, Lyra, he whispers under his breath. Quickly! Tass and I bolt toward the scholar pens far to our left. Behind us echo the voices of thousands of prisoners, marshals, tribesmen, mariners, even wild men and barbarians. The marshals have gathered them into one enormous circle and formed a cordon of spearmen, two guards thick around them. There, Lyra! Tass shoves the keys he stole into my hands and nods to the north side of the pen. I will warn the Skirite! He veers away, staying close to the edges of the pen and whispering through the wide spaces between its wooden slats. I spot the door, which is guarded by six legionnaires. The racket of the prison yard is loud enough that they could not possibly hear me approach. But I tread carefully anyway. When I am within 3 feet of the door, and just inches from the closest legionnaire, he shifts, putting a hand on his sword, and I freeze. I can smell the leather of his armor, the steel tips of the arrows across his back. Just one more step, Lyra. He can't see you. He has no idea you're here. As if handling an angry snake, I remove the key ring from my pocket, holding on to it tightly so it doesn't jangle. I wait until one of the legionnaires turns to say something to the rest before I put the key in the lock. It jams. I wiggle the key, first gently and then a bit harder. One of the soldiers turns toward the door. I look at him, right at his eyes, but he shrugs and turns back. Patience, Lyra. I take a deep breath and lift the lock, because it's attached to something that is grounded in the earth. It does not disappear. I hope no one is looking at this door right now. They'd see a lock floating inches from where it should be, and even the most dim-witted orcs would know that's unnatural. Again, I twist the key, almost. Just then, something fastens onto my arm. A long hand that curls like a feeler around my bicep.
Ah, Lyra of Serra, someone breathes into my ear. What a talented girl you are. I am very interested in examining your skill further.
My invisibility falters, and the keys fall to the icy stones with a clatter. I look up to find myself staring into a pointed face with large, watery eyes. The Warden.
Chapter 55. Elias. Shava warned me that the waiting place would pull at me. As I make my way across the freezing prison yard to the pens, I feel it, a yank in my chest, like an invisible hook. I'm coming, I shout in my head. The more you bully me, the slower I'll be, so stop it. The pull lessens slightly, as if the waiting place has heard. 15 yards to the pens. 13. 10. Then I hear footsteps. The soldier from Koff's entrance has caught up with me. From his cautious gait, I can tell that my uniform and the sims across my back haven't fooled him. 10 hells. Ah well, this was always a stretch, as far as disguises go. He attacks. I try to sidestep him, but Darin's body has me off balance, and the soldier clips me, knocking me down and sending Darin rolling away. The Legionnaire's eyes widen when my hood falls back.
"Prisoner loose!"
he bellows. I snatch a knife from his belt and plunge it into his side. Too late. The Legionnaires at Koff's entrance have heard his cry. Four of the spearmen guarding the prisoners break away. Orcs. I smile. Not enough to take me down. I draw my Sims as the first soldier approaches, duck under his spear, and slice his wrist. He screams and releases the weapon. I drop him with a blow across the temple, then pivot and halve the spear of the next soldier, felling him with a blade through the stomach. My blood rises now, my warrior's instincts at full tilt. I sweep up the fallen soldier's spear and send it flying into the shoulder of the third orc. The fourth hesitates, and I take him down with a shoulder to his gut. His head cracks against the cobblestones, and he does not move again. A spear whizzes by my ear, and pain explodes in my head. It's not enough to stop me. A dozen spearmen break from the prisoners. They know now that I am more than just an escaped prisoner.
Run!
I roar at the gaping prisoners, pointing at the gap in the cordon.
Escape! Run!
Two marshals bolt through the cordon and make for Koff's portcullis. For a moment, it seems as if the entire yard watches them, holding its breath. Then a guard shouts, the spell is broken, and all at once, dozens of inmates surge out, not caring if they are impaling their fellows on spears. The martial spearmen attempt to fill the gap, but there are thousands of prisoners, and they've caught the scent of freedom. The soldiers running toward me slow at the shouts of their comrades. I heave Darin up and race for the scholar pens. Why in the 10 hells aren't they open yet? There should be scholars flooding the yard.
Elias!
Tass darts toward me.
The lock is stuck! And Lyre, the warden!
I spot the warden scuttling across the yard with Lyre in a chokehold. She kicks at him desperately, but he's lifted her off the ground, and her face turns red from lack of air.
No, Lyre!
I'm already moving for her, but I grit my teeth and force myself to stop. We need those pens open if we want to get the scholars out and loaded onto the boats.
Get to her, Tass, I say. Distract the warden. I'll deal with the lock.
Tass runs, and I drop Darin beside the scholar pen. The legionnaires guarding its entrance have bolted toward Koff's in an attempt to stop the mass exodus of prisoners, and I turn my attention to the lock. It's jammed good and tight, and no matter how I twist, it does not open. Within the pens, a man shoves his way forward, only his dark eyes visible through the slats. His face is so filthy that I cannot tell if he is old or young.
Elias Victorious,
he says in a harsh whisper. As I unsheathe my sim to break the lock, I venture a guess.
Araj?
The man nods.
What's taking so long? We've... Behind you!
His warning saves me a spear through the gut, and I barely dodge the next. A dozen soldiers close on me, undistracted by the chaos at the gate.
The lock, Victorious!
Araj says.
Quickly! Either give me a minute!
I hiss through gritted teeth, flicking my sims to divert two more spears.
Or make yourself useful!
Araj barks an order to the scholars within the pen. Seconds later, a barrage of rocks flies over the top and rains down upon the spearmen. Watching this tactic is like witnessing a pack of mice flinging pebbles at a horde of ravening cats. Fortunately for me, these mice have good aim. Two of the closest spearmen falter, giving me enough time to spin and break the lock with a swipe of my sim. The door bursts open, and with a roar, the scholars explode from the pen. I swipe up a Seric steel dagger from one of the fallen spearmen and hand it to Araj, who barrels out with the rest.
"Open the other pen!" I shout. "I have to get to Lyra!"
A sea of scholar prisoners now crowds the yard, but the warden's form pokes out above them. A small group of scholar children, Tass among them, attack the old man. He lashes out with his sim to keep them at bay, but he's loosened his hold on Lyra, and she thrashes in an attempt to break free.
"Warden!"
I bellow. He turns at my voice, and Lyra kicks her heel straight back into his shin while biting the flesh of his arm. The warden jerks up his sim, and one of the scholar children slips close and bashes his knee with a heavy skillet. The warden roars, and Lyra tumbles away from him, reaching for the dagger at her waist. But it's not there. It gleams now in Tass's hands. His small face twists with rage as he lunges for the warden. His friends swarm all over the old man, biting, clawing, bringing him down, taking their revenge on the monster who has abused them since the day they were born. Tass plunges the dagger into the warden's throat, flinching from the geyser of blood that erupts. The other children scurry away, surrounding Lyra, who pulls Tass to her chest. I am beside them moments later.
"Elias,"
Tass whispers. He cannot take his eyes off the warden.
"I..."
"You slew a demon, Tass of the North." I kneel beside him. "I am proud to fight by your side. Get the other children out. We're not free yet." I look up at the gate, where the guards now battle a horde of crazed prisoners. "Meet us at the boats."
"Darin!"
Lyra looks at me.
"Where?"
"By the pens," I say. "I can't wait until he wakes up and I can give him hell. I've had to drag him all around this bleeding prison." The drums thud frenziedly, and over the chaos, I can just barely hear the answering drums of a distant garrison.
"Even if we escape onto the boats,"
Lyra says as we race for the pens,
"we'll have to get out before we reach the Forest of Dusk, and the marshals will be waiting, won't they?"
"They will," I say. "But I have a plan." Well, not exactly a plan, more like a hunch, and a possibly delusional hope that I can use my new occupation to do something quite mad. It's a gamble that will depend on the waiting place and shaver and my power of persuasion. With Darin slung over my shoulder, we head for Koth's entry gate, inundated with prisoners. The crowd is rabid. There are too many people fighting to get out, and too many marshals fighting to keep us in. I hear a metallic groaning.
"Elias!"
Lyra points at the portcullis. Slowly, ponderously, it begins to drop. The sound gives new heart to the marshals beating back the prisoners, and Lyra and I are driven farther from the gate.
"Torches, Lyra!"
I shout. She snatches two off a nearby wall, and we wield them like sims. Those around us instinctively cringe from the fire, allowing us to force a path through. The portcullis drops another few feet, almost at eye level now. Lyra grabs my arm.
"One push!" she shouts. "Together! Now!"
We lock arms, lower the torches, and ram our way through the crowd. I shove her beneath the portcullis ahead of me, but she resists and whips around, forcing me to come with her. And then we are beneath, through, running past the soldiers battling prisoners, making straight for the boathouse, where I see two barges already a quarter mile down the river, and two more launching from the docks, scholars hanging off the sides.
"She did it!"
Lyra shouts.
"Afia did it!"
"Bowman!"
A line of soldiers appears atop Koff's wall.
"Run!"
A hail of arrows rains down around us, and half the scholars racing for the boathouse with us go down.
Almost there, almost.
"Elias! Lyra!"
I spot Afia's red-black braids at the boathouse door. She waves us into the structure, her eyes on the bowman. Her face is slashed, her hands covered in blood, but she quickly leads us to a small canoe.
"As much as I'd enjoy a boating adventure with the unwashed masses," she says, "I think this will be faster. Hurry!"
I lay Darin down between two benches, grab an oar, and push off from the boathouse. Behind us, Araj pulls Tass and B onto the final scholar barge and launches it. His people pole it forward with panicked speed. Swiftly, the current pulls us away from the ruin of Koth and toward the forest of dusk.
"You said you had a plan."
Lya nods to the soft green line of the forest to the south. Darin lies between us, still unconscious, his head resting on his sister's pack.
"Might be a good time to share it."
What do I say to her of the trade I made with Shaver? Where do I even begin?
"With the truth."
"I'll share it," I say quietly enough that only she can hear. "But first, there's something else I need to tell you. About how I survived the poison. And about what I've become."
Chapter 56. Helene. 1 month later. Deep winter roars into Antium, on the back of a 3-day blizzard. Snow blankets the city so thickly that the scholar sweepers work around the clock to keep the thoroughfares clear. Midwinter candles glow all night in windows across the city, from the finest mansions to the poorest hovels. Emperor Marcus will celebrate the holiday at the Imperial Palace with the paters and maters of a few dozen important gens. My spies tell me that many deals will be struck, trade agreements and government postings that will further cement Marcus's power. I know it to be true, because I helped arrange most of those deals. Within the Blackguard barracks I sit at my desk, signing an order to send a contingent of my men to Tiberium. We have wrested the port back from the wild men who nearly took it, but they have not given up. Now that they've smelled blood in the water, they will return, with more men. I gaze out of the window at the white city. A thought flits through my mind, a memory of Hannah and me throwing snowballs at each other long ago, when Father brought us to Antium as girls. I smile. Remember. Then I lock the memory away in a dark place, where I will not see it again, and turn back to my work.
"Learn to lock your damned window, girl."
The raspy voice is instantly recognizable. Still, I jump. The cook's eyes glint beneath a hood that hides her scars. She keeps her distance, ready to slip back out the window at the first sign of a threat. "You could just use the front door." I keep a hand on a dagger strapped to the underside of my desk. "I'll make certain no one stops you."
"Friends now, are we?"
The cook tilts her scarred face and shows her teeth in an approximation of a smile.
"How sweet."
"Your wound, has it healed fully?"
"I'm still here."
The cook peers out the window and fidgets.
"I heard about your family," she says gruffly. "I'm sorry."
I raise my eyebrows. "You went through the trouble of sneaking in here to pay your condolences?"
"That," the cook says, "and to tell you that when you're ready to take on the Bitch of Blackcliff, I can help. You know how to find me."
I consider the sealed letter from Marcus on my desk. "Come back tomorrow," I say. "We'll talk." She nods, and without so much as a whisper, slips back out the window. Curiosity pulls at me, and I walk over and peer out, scanning the sheer walls above and below for a hook, scratches, any indication as to how she scaled an unscalable wall. Nothing. I'll have to ask her about that trick. I turn my attention to Marcus's letter. Tiberim is under control, and Jen Serka and Jens Araman have fallen in line. No more excuses. It is time to deal with her. There is only one her he could be talking about. I read on. Be quiet and careful. I do not want a quick assassination, Shrike. I want utter destruction. I want her to feel it. I want the Empire to know my strength. Your sister was a delight at the dinner with the Mariner Ambassador last night. She quite put him at ease about the shift in power here. Such a useful girl. I pray she remains healthy and serves her Empire for a long time to come. Emperor Marcus Farrar. The fiver on message duty jumps when I open my office door. After I give him his task, I reread Marcus's letter and wait impatiently. Moments later, a knock sounds. Bloodshrike, Captain Harper says when he enters. You called? I hand him the letter. We need a plan, I say. She disbanded her army when she realized I was going to tell Marcus of the coup, but that doesn't mean she can't muster it again. Karis won't go down easily.
Or at all, Harper mutters. This will take months. Even if she doesn't expect an attack from Marcus, she will expect an attack from you. She'll be prepared.
I know that, I say, which is why we need a plan that actually works. That starts with finding Quinn Veturius.
No one has heard from him since his escape in Serra.
I know where to find him, I say. Pull a team together. Make sure Dex is on it. We'll leave in 2 days. Dismissed. Harper nods, and I turn back to my work. When he doesn't leave, I raise my eyebrows. Do you require something, Harper?
No, Shrike. Only...
He looks more uncomfortable than I've ever seen him. Enough to actually alarm me. Since the execution, he and Dex have been invaluable. They supported my reshuffling of the Black Guard. Lieutenant Sergius is now posted on Isle South, and unwaveringly backed me when some of the Black Guard attempted to rebel.
If we're going after the Commandant, Shrike, then I know something that might be of use.
Go on. Back in Nur, the day before the riot, I saw Elias, but I never told you. I lean back in my seat, sensing that I'm about to learn more about Arvatas Harper than the previous Bloodshrike ever did.
What I have to say, Arvatas goes on, is about why I never told you. It's about why the Commandant kept an eye out for me in Blackcliff and got me into the Black Guard. It's about Elias, and...
He takes a deep breath.
About our father.
Our father. Our father. His and Elias's. It takes a moment for the words to sink in. Then I order him to sit, and I lean forward. I'm listening. After Harper leaves, I brave the slush and muck of the streets to head to the courier's office, where 2 packages have arrived from the Aquila Villa in Serra. The first is my midwinter gift for Livia. After checking to make sure it's intact, I open the 2nd package. I catch my breath at the glimmer of Elias's mask in my hand. According to a Koff courier, Elias and a few 100 scholar fugitives disappeared into the Forest of Dusk shortly after breaking out of the prison. 12 Empire soldiers tried to follow, but their mangled bodies were found on the forest's borders the next morning. No one has seen or heard from the fugitives since. Perhaps the nightweed killed my friend, or perhaps the forest did, or perhaps, somehow, he found some other way to evade death. Like his grandfather and mother, Elias has always had an uncanny skill at surviving what would kill anyone else. It doesn't matter. He's gone. And the part of my heart where he lived is dead now. I tuck the mask in my pocket. I'll find a place for it in my quarters.
I head for the palace, Livy's gift nestled under my arm, mulling over what Arvatas told me. The Commandant kept an eye on me in Blackcliff, because it was my father's last request. At least, that's my suspicion. She's never acknowledged it. I asked the Commandant to give me the mission to shadow you, because I wanted to learn about Elias through you. I didn't know any more about our father than what my mother told me. Her name was Renatia, and she said my father never fit the mold that Blackcliff tried to force him into. She said he was kind. Good. For a long time I thought she was lying. I've never been those things, so it couldn't be true. But perhaps I just didn't inherit my father's better traits. Perhaps they went to a different son. I berated him, of course. He should have said something long ago. But after my anger and incredulity settled, I understood the information for what it was. A crack in the Commandant's armor. A weapon I can use against her. The guards of the palace let me pass into the Imperial wing with only nervous glances at each other. I have begun rooting out the enemies of the Empire, and I started here. Marcus can burn in the hells for all I care, but Livy's marriage to him puts her in danger. His enemies will be hers, and I will not lose her. Lyra of Sarah had the same type of love for her sibling. For the first time since meeting her, I understand her. I find my sister sitting out on a balcony that overlooks her private garden. Faris and another blackguard stand in the shadows a dozen feet away. I told my friend that he didn't need to take the posting. Guarding an 18-year-old girl is certainly not a coveted position for a member of the Bloodshrike's force. "If I'm going to kill," he'd said, "I'd rather do it while protecting someone." He nods a greeting to me, and my sister looks up. "Bloodshrike?" She stands but doesn't hug me or kiss me the way she once would have, though I can tell she wants to. I nod to her room curtly. I want privacy. My sister turns to the six girls who sit near her, three of whom are dark-skinned and yellow-eyed. When she first wrote to Marcus's mother, requesting that the woman send three girls from Marcus's extended family to serve as her ladies-in-waiting, I was stunned, as was every illustrian family that had been passed over. The plebeians, however, still talk about it. The girls and their illustrian counterparts disappear at Livia's gently given order. Faris and the other blackguard move to follow us, but I wave them off. My sister and I enter her bedchamber, and I lay her midwinter gift on the bed, and watch as she tears it open. She gasps when the light shines off the ornate silver edges of my old mirror. "But this is yours," Livia says. "Mother would want you to have it. There's no place for it in the Bloodshrike's quarters." "It is beautiful. Will you hang it up for me?" I summon a servant to bring me a hammer and nails, and when he returns, I remove Livy's old mirror and plug the spy hole behind it. Marcus will just have his spies cut a new one. But for now, at least, my sister and I can speak in private. She sits on the vanity chair beside me as I hammer in a nail. When I speak, I keep my voice low. "Are you all right? If you're asking the same thing you've asked every day since the wedding," Livy lifts an eyebrow, "then yes, he hasn't touched me since the first time. Besides, I approached him that night." My sister lifts her chin. "I will not have him thinking I fear him, no matter what he does." I suppress a shudder. Living with Marcus, being his wife, is Livy's life now. My disgust and loathing of him will only make that more difficult. She did not speak to me of her wedding night, and I haven't asked. "I walked in on him talking to himself the other day." Livy looks at me. "It wasn't the first time." "Lovely." I hammer in a nail. "An emperor who is sadistic and hears voices." He's not crazy, Livy says thoughtfully. He's in control until he speaks about doing violence to you, just you. Then he gets twitchy. I think he sees his brother's ghost, Hal. I think that's why he hasn't touched you. Well, if he is haunted by Zack's ghost, I say, I hope it sticks around. At least until... we lock eyes. Until we have our vengeance. Livia and I haven't spoken of it. It was understood the first moment I saw her, after that horrible day in the throne room. My sister brushes out her hair. You've heard nothing more of Elias. I shrug. And what of Harper? Livy tries again. Stella Galerius has been angling to meet him. You should introduce them. My sister furrows her brow as she watches me. How is Dex? You two are so... Dex is a loyal soldier and an excellent lieutenant. Marriage might be a bit more complicated for him. Most of your acquaintances aren't his type. And... I lift up the mirror. You can stop now. I don't want you to be lonely, Livy says. If we had mother or father, or even Hannah, it would be different, but hell... With respect, Empress, I say quietly. My name is Bloodstrike. She sighs and I attach the mirror, straightening it with a touch. All done. I catch my reflection. I appear as I did just a few months ago, on the eve of my graduation. Same body, same face, only the eyes are different. I look into the pale gaze of the woman in front of me. For a moment, I see Helene Aquila, the girl who hoped, the girl who thought the world was fair. But Helene Aquila is broken, unmade. Helene Aquila is dead. The woman in the mirror is not Helene Aquila. She is the Bloodstrike. The Bloodstrike is not lonely, for the Empire is her mother and her father, her lover and her best friend. She needs nothing else. She needs no one else. She stands apart.
Chapter 57 Liar. Marin rolls out beyond the forest of dusk, a vast white carpet dotted with iced over lakes and patches of forest. I've never seen a sky so clear and blue, or breathed air that feels as if it's filling me with life every time I inhale. The free lands. Finally. Already I love everything about this place. It is familiar in the way my parents would be familiar, I think. If I could see them again after all these years. For the first time in months, I do not feel the chokehold of the Empire around my throat. I watch Araj give the final order to the scholars to move out. Their relief is palpable. Despite Elias's assurances that no spirits would trouble us, the Forest of Dusk weighed heavier and heavier upon us the longer we spent within it. Leave, it seemed to hiss at us. You don't belong here. Araj finds me beside the once abandoned cabin I've reclaimed for Darren, myself, and Afia, a few hundred yards from the border of the forest.
Are you sure you don't wish to join us? I hear Adisa has healers that even the Empire cannot match.
Another month in the cold would do him in. I nod to the cabin, sparkling clean within and glowing with the heat of a roaring fire. He needs rest and warmth. If he is still not well in a few weeks, I will find a healer to come to me. I do not tell Araj my deepest secret fear, that I do not think Darren will wake up, that I think the blow was too much after all he had already suffered, that I worry my brother is gone forever.
I am in your debt, Liar of Sarah.
Araj looks out at the scholars trickling to a road about a quarter mile distant, 412 in the end. So few.
I hope I will see you in Adisa one day soon, with your brother at your side. Your people have need of someone like you.
He takes his leave and calls to Tass, who bids goodbye to Elias. A month of food, baths, and clean, if too large, clothes, has done wonders for the child. But he's been pensive since killing the warden. I've heard him moaning and crying out in his sleep. The old man haunts Tass still. I watch as Elias offers Tass one of the Serik steel blades he stole off a Khoff guard. Tass throws his arms around Elias's neck, whispering something that makes him grin, and scampers off to join the rest of the scholars. As the last of the group moves out, Afia emerges from the cabin. She, too, is dressed for travel. "I've already spent too long away from my tribe," the Soldara says. "Skies know what Jabran's been up to in my absence. Probably has a half-dozen girls with child by now. I'll be paying bribes to silence their angry parents until I'm broke." "Something tells me Jabran is fine," I smile at her. "Did you say goodbye to Elias?" She nods. "He's hiding something from me." I look away. I know very well what Elias is hiding. He has confided only to me about his deal with the Soul Catcher. And if the others have noticed that he's gone most of the night and for long stretches during the day, they've not seen fit to mention it. "Best be sure he's not hiding anything from you," Afia continues. "Bad way to get into bed with someone." "Skies, Afia," I sputter, looking behind me and hoping Elias hasn't heard. Thankfully, he's disappeared back into the forest. I'm not getting into bed with him, nor do I have any interest.
"Don't bother, girl," Afia rolls her eyes. "It's embarrassing to listen to."
She considers me for a second, and then gives me a hug, swift and surprisingly warm. "Thank you, Afia," I say into her braids. "For everything." She releases me with an arched brow.
"Speak of my honor far and wide, Liar of Sarah," she says. "You owe me that. And take care of that brother of yours."
I look in through the cabin's windows at Darin. His dark blonde hair is clean and cropped short, his face youthful and handsome again. I've carefully tended all of his wounds, and most are now nothing but scars. But still, he has not stirred. Perhaps he never will. A few hours after Afia and the scholars have disappeared over the horizon, Elias emerges from the forest. The cabin, so quiet now that everyone has left, suddenly feels less lonely. He knocks before entering, bringing a burst of cold in with him. Beardless now, and with his hair cropped short and some of his weight back, he looks more like his old self. Except his eyes. They are different, more thoughtful, perhaps. The weight of the burden he has taken on still astounds me, though he has explained to me multiple times that he accepted it with a whole heart, wanted it even. I still feel angry at the Soul Catcher. There must be some way out of this vow. Some way Elias can live a normal life. Travel to the southern lands he's always spoken of with such fondness. Some way he can visit his tribe and be reunited with Mamie Rila. For now, the forest holds to him tightly. When he does emerge from the trees, it is never for long. Sometimes the ghosts even follow him out. More than once I've heard the low timbre of his voice murmuring words of comfort to a wounded soul. Every now and then he leaves the forest frowning, his mind on some troublesome spirit. I know he's struggled with one in particular. I think it's a girl. But he doesn't speak about her.
"Dead chicken for your thoughts?"
He holds up the limp animal, and I nod to the basin. "Only if you pluck it." I slide up onto the counter beside him as he works. "I miss Tass, and Afia, and Araj," I say. "It's so quiet without them."
"Tass worships you," Elias says with a grin. "I think he's in love, actually."
"Only because I told him stories and fed him," I say. "If only every boy were so easy to win over." I do not mean for the comment to sound so pointed. and I bite my lip as soon as I say it. Elias lifts a dark eyebrow and gives me a fleeting glance of curiosity before looking back down at the half-plucked